And when you least expect it, it's a guest verse from Scrump and Evelyn.
Hello.
We've dropped into some part of the video here to give you our quick rundown of how the woke is being put away. We shan't waste your time. We'll get right into it. I've kind of kept some of this stuff up my sleeve anyway, and I think that I've passed this on to you at some point, but there's a few people who've been doing meta-analysis on how both academia and media represent issues in terms of keywords. And it's a very good piece here. It's by David Rosado. It's over on Substack. And he has charted through New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, The Wall Street Journal, all of these things. He has charted the demise,
the isms,
yes, the isms of woke and the putting of the woke away. but these are the kind of his analyses that show that really woke peaked in 2020 and 2021. There's some good charts here which show the keywords: racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia's one of the last in, so it's one of the last out.
Well, I would say actually the only one that really I find interesting as a trend there is the one on the bottom right, but I think we all know where that one comes from.
Yes, we'll see that spike back up, and probably with the Islamophobia as well. He also has analysis that shows the British press acted in an almost identical way. If anything, the British press was slightly ahead of the curve in terms of the woke going away.
We've seen the other side of this, of course, as well, which if I presume you were to take these subjects and, or sorry, the red meat countenance to these subjects and graph them, you would see that from sort of 2020 onwards, there's just a gradual and almost maybe at times exponential increase in talking about free speech and TERFs and whatever, whatever other pet sort of issue anti-woke is around.
But if you actually just measure what the press is saying in aggregate, the peak of woke was 2020 and 2021. There's another piece here that is referenced in this piece. It's by a guy called Musa Al-Gahabi, who's writing a book, I believe, basically about the post-woke world.
Yes.
These are all centrists. The other one we just had up has a comment from Toby Young on it, if you can believe that.
Hardcore.
So it's the centre-right and the centrists and people who really aren't aware of us, I'd say. I'd be very surprised if these people knew who we are or even knew who AA was. And yet they are saying something identical simply based on data. This is an article from the Heterodox Academy, and it's based on the number of academic papers being published. And it shows here that woke went into recession in terms of discrimination against women in 2018. It went into recession in terms of LGB stuff in general in 2020, and it went into recession with trans stuff in 2021. Racial bias was always very big. I think this also puts to bed the idea that quote-unquote woke came out of nowhere, because this is since 2000. And as we can see, it's not as massive a spike as you'd think. It's actually kind of a straight line.
Yes, it's not exponential, but
linear. It's a linear relationship that is now tailing off. The trans stuff was a bit more exponential, and as was the LGBT stuff. But in terms of women, and especially racial minorities, it is quite a linear curve. There's some very small bits here I'd like to read from this article. This entitled Gold Rushes, and this really explains what's been going on with the academia, especially that is led by the framing of central power. In a 2012 paper, sociologist Gil Ilan explored how social and historical developments can often give rise to an academic gold rush. Periods of intense interdisciplinary scholarship on particular topics, wherein large numbers of scholars who are not specialists on a given subject matter and have not previously published much at all, if at all, on a particular topic, suddenly shift their scholarly attention capitalize on dramatically increased public attention, see media attention, to particular issue and the opportunities entailed thereby. As I illustrated in a 2018 paper on the then burgeoning field of Trump studies, the research produced during these gold rushes is often subpar because the incentive structures are even more messed up than usual. You are seeing something very almost boilerplate, which is that the academic free market, in quotes, is simply responding to what they are being told to do.
Well, look at the last line of that paragraph you were reading there. If we scroll up just a little bit.
Yes.
Where is it? The goal in a gold rush for scholars and general editors alike is to deliver big, splashy results that affirm the narratives key stakeholders are eager to advance. It's a consensus-building operation.
Yes. I think this is the best part because it illustrates the fact that woke is going away, not in a tailing off sense. This is a secular kind of decrease in the amount of woke. But I'll let you read this before I talk over it.
The post 2011 academic gold rush on identitarian bias, discrimination, and inequality seems to have run its course. Production on these topics has plateaued or declined as a result, at least relative to their hitherto unprecedented peaks. However, although the rate of increase in academic research produced on these topics may normalise into something that approximates pre-2011 levels, the overall volume of research on identity-based bias and discrimination will consequently increase each year and eventually exceed the current high watermarks. Again, the typical trend for literature produced on most topics will be an increase in total papers published every year relative to the previous year, as a function of the ever-increasing numbers of journals and researchers, as well as ever-intensifying publication pressures and expectations. Research on bias and discrimination is not unusual in these respects. A secular annual increase in research produced was the norm before the Great Awakening, and it'll likely be the norm again, probably sooner rather than later. The intensity of focus on identity-based bias and discrimination that defined the last decade of scholarship could not go on forever. However, absolute declines in production on these topics will likely be even more short-lived. Yet, as the awakening recedes, it seems likely its main legacy will not be the huge volume of fairly questionable yet rarely read or cited academic research it produced, but rather the equally widespread, dramatic, and contemporaneous changes in policies, procedures, practices, and administrative structures, many of which will likely persist for the foreseeable future, even if some of the most extreme and pernicious changes over the last 10 years do eventually get rolled back. Put another way, we may be returning to normal science in most fields. However, this neither entails nor implies that higher ed institutions will simply revert back to their pre-2011 status quo. The awakening may be ending, but that means it's time to sleep in the bed we've made, for better and for worse. Now, obviously, he's making a wider point here about how academic conduct has been affected by this, and this is something where, you know, the Christopher Ruffo plagiarism thing that we'll get to in a little bit. But the general point here is the fact that woke didn't just come out of nowhere.
Yes.
These were ideas, and particularly in a lot of ways, sort of postmodern and extremely liberal ideas, were floating around universities for decades with no one really grappling on and taking them for any use. However, some subset of people within the regime have obviously seen an advantage taken by sort of redeveloping these ideas and turning them into something else that is useful for them. However, I don't think that's the case any longer.
No, and the point being made here is that it is a haggle. Even if the woke is put away, even if the entirety of academia turns against woke, it's still taking 10 and giving you back 5. And that's how it works. That's why they can abandon the paradigm, because it's already accomplished so much. It's also a much older paradigm than people realise. This is an article from 2009 from Outright Vermont, which is an activist group. 16-year-old begins campaign for gender-neutral bathrooms in Vermont schools. Again, 2009. The groundwork for this was laid while most of you were simply not paying attention, is the problem.
Yes.
Woke didn't appear out of nowhere. It only appeared out of nowhere from your perspective.
Yes.
Here's another one. Here's basically Time magazine coming out and doing proper telegraphing.
Well, yes, as we sort of discussed a little bit before we started recording this, this is essentially them suggesting the fact that there is a slippery slope, and that's a good thing.
Yes.
But this is the same Time magazine now that will probably, sympathetically and almost in a worshipping sort of sense, talk about brave feminists and brave civil rights activists because they're coming back round to equality as opposed to being against it.
Well, it also tallies with a lot of the charts that we saw that the ramp-up started in 2010, 2011. It didn't start in 2019, 2020.
No.
All of this agrees with the data we are seeing. We are seeing both qualitative and quantitative examples that become undeniable when combined together. There is no way from this information to deny what is happening. It is not being said by us either. It is being said by people simply doing metadata analysis from a centrist perspective.
And we can see the other side of the coin as well. The first big breakout anti-woke moments were things like Elevatorgate and Gamergate. And most of the people who were involved in sort of creating political content online came from some sort of flavour of anti-SJW-ism.
Yes.
Which was really what we called woke back then.
Yes. I think it's really just the label that people attach to it that is confusing people.
But this you've got this compilation up here. This is from Ben Shapiro in 2017.
Yes.
So this is 7 years ago, there was enough of this content around to display that there was a movement built around opposing the woke movement.
Yes. It's really just the woke, anti-woke paradigm that most people have been living in. And that's the problem. The problem is that most people have essentially grown up politically in this paradigm. We really are a splinter of this paradigm. AA, to an extent, is a splinter of this paradigm. We all have come out of, unfortunately, the online politics soup. And at some point, you had to engage with this stuff to get eyeballs. It has been the paradigm for as long as this generation, at least, of online alternative politics has existed.
Yes, and people are only really able to react and exist within sort of political moments that have already been previously outlined. That's what so much of that groundwork was.
Yes.
It was outlining all these woke and anti-woke positions so that was the dialectic distant, as you described in your Freedom Fries and Coronation Chicken, which is both a article and also a video on our YouTube for those who are interested.
We'll take this opportunity to quickly shill and say, if you haven't heard of us before, we run a Substack called Anti-Politics, in which we elaborate a lot of these points, and we also have the slightly legacy YouTube channel. I've tried to rename it a few times, but it's still just stuck as Scrump Monkey. So just the Scrump Monkey YouTube channel. We've put all of this up there, but that is a long-form essay about really the paradigm shifts, that the biggest problem that we have is that people cannot see outside of the current political moment, and that makes them unable to understand what has come before and what comes next, because they have this obsessive present-mindedness to them. I'd also like to quickly point out that, you know, we have the Tucker Carlson interview in the thumbnail for a reason, because it's part of the same paradigm, we believe. There was a great Substack essay by Morgoth put out called Western Perestroika, Is Trump the West Gorbachev?, in which he talks about the idea of Western glasnost, that the West, due to its managerial collapse, is behaving like the Soviet Union did with glasnost, which was their word for opening up and basically slightly lessening restrictions for the survival of the Soviet Union. And what we see really with the Putin interview is another aspect of that glasnost.
Well, we have essentially been given sort of hints, and certain sources have said that interviews with Putin have been planned since possibly as early as the end of last year.
Yes.
And that this sort of signals to us that some aspect of the Western regime, probably the cutting edge and the more competent elements of it, recognise that, well, we can't defeat Russia, but we can say we lost whilst also, you know, bashing people that we have sort of held up as enemies and kayfabe.
I just wanted to put this one on screen as well, because there is going to be another Russia-file conference, which I believe that a large amount of global press will probably end up interviewing Putin at, or at least being at perhaps press conferences. I just enjoyed who was in the background of this one, which is rather funny. But March is likely to be the month of Putin, as it were. And many of these were planned before the Tucker interview. Tucker's interview took place with the blessing of the US regime. You can see it in the fact that his interview has been bolstered rather than being simply suppressed or ignored by the mainstream press. And if you don't think they can do that, look at what they did to the Christchurch video and how that basically became illegal to possess. We know from our own sources that, as you said, that any UK Putin interview will have the tacit support of the UK Foreign Office. We are seeing a normalization of Russian-Western relations coinciding with an even more rapid putting away of the woke. But the interesting part is that the putting away of the woke started before the Ukraine war, which I'm not quite sure what to make of that in certain ways, but...
Well, you've got here the changing of the political moment into a footing where the West is frankly trying to, or frantically, I should say, trying to rebuild its hollowed-out institutions, meshes perfectly with them curing favour by, or currying favour, sorry, by putting woke away. It's one of the pillars of this sort of new paradigm that they're trying to form. The military defeat of NATO in Ukraine has expedited this process. But as the data shows, we have already been in a woke recession since 2021, at least by most aggregate measures. What we have accidentally stumbled on is culture moving towards a war footing before the war. We are in a new paradigm. He himself has pointed this out in a recent video, how to read the media and parse the regime. The regime has to prepare people for what is coming next. It will always signal, as it did with the article in 2013. The elite always garners its legitimacy through framing. Russian reconciliation is masked as boo Tucker Carlson, boo evil Russophiles, whilst inroads at the same time are being made to alleviate the blatant and objective losses, both in terms of embargoes and military action, that we've all seen. In the same vein, boo anti-Semites and a general anti-extremism narrative will allow for woke to be put away in the name of the regime's new allies. This allows the very elites who welcomed woke in to pretend that they had to do it under duress, and that what they needed was brave Jews, blacks, feminists, and other civil rights activists to speak up, because we must remember, woke isn't going away on its own.
Well, instead of capitalizing on the new paradigm, instead of moving into the new paradigm and capitalizing on the telegraphing of the attacks, really, it's a slightly to kind of go with the image on the screen there, a slightly soy way of thinking of it, but the regime is a giant lumbering beast, and it does in many ways have to telegraph its attacks to make sure that the people around it and the people it is serving in many ways, or at least serving the narrative to, understand what's going on before and during this. Otherwise, people will simply be confused. That's why we saw all of this prepared in advance. But instead, all we have is people desperate to scream for one more year at the blue-haired weirdos, for one more year of AdSense payouts.
Anti-woke has been a bonanza because it was fueled by regime money, and we have spent dozens of hours and countless streams explaining the direct financial and media relationships between anti-woke and the current regime. Anti-woke and woke are functionally the same thing. We are all politicised social justice warriors now.
And I will once again thank AA for putting together his quick list of our top 10 containment streams, but a lot of that content deals with this. It deals with the idea that what is presented as anti-regime and anti-woke is mostly funded and controlled in a completely provable manner by the very people it claims to counter.
Types like Christopher Ruffo, with his push for a white civil rights, are already building on the new ground that is the post-woke world. As are many of our elites, such as the UK Minister of Defence, and some rogue academics whose examples we used above. To continue to tilt at the woke windmill is so obviously counterproductive, we openly question the motives of those who still do it. They are pretending that a movement we all know is in decline is still alive and well.
The talk of waging a war on woke whilst the regime talks about feeding you into the meat grinder of a land war with Russia is suicidally idiotic. And now I guess we can do our quick conclusions, I suppose.
Well, I would make one last comment here, that this is an attempt to create a society-wide front that is combative against something.
Yes.
Everyone is being prepared for combat against something. And then at some point, that thing will be revealed.
It's the Maoist Cultural Revolution paradigm. It's the students are the enemy, the students are the ally. Woke, you know, the white man is the enemy. No, woke is the enemy now. And they all change places and run around.
Yes.
Look into that if you don't know how that process worked, because it's very similar. But
to
anyway.
Sum up this whole dynamic and the way that we have seen it for a number of years now... Since 1945, the structure of Western law has been predicated on equal treatment, opportunities, and outcome, and possibly arguably even earlier, given some of the very early race-related acts. The cementing of this paradigm under the civil rights regime of the 60s set in stone a militant grievance culture that lay in waiting. At some point in the early 2010s, decided that these grievances should be further mainstreamed, redeveloped, repurposed for the powers that be into a friend-enemy distinction that allowed the period to be deluged with dialectics, debates, not real politics. This sort of hyper-adversarial culture based upon the most combative elements of civil rights law can't last forever. We know and recognise this every day, and our elites know this too. This is why the cutting edge of Western regimes appears to be renegotiating civil rights and developing a culture which is not wholly aimed against the very people of the Western world turning, at least in an outward appearance.
Alul, in his conception of propaganda, identifies agitation and integration propaganda. Woke is agitation. Fresh Prince is integration. Like with the 1980s and the false Reagan revolution, we are simply moving into an integration phase with regime propaganda rather than the agitation phase of the last decade. The underlying post-war project continues unabated. It is merely the framing that is changing. A political formula centered around greater unity is required amidst the continuing decline of Western powers. If we are to ever seek victory, we must embark on our own contiguous project that does not shift with the political winds and is not lashed to the fleeting political moment.
Thank you for listening.
Anyway, back to UAA.